Want to wander over. Welcome to Barnes & Noble this afternoon. My name's Crash. I'm a longtime radio guy here in town, and it's my honor to act as moderator for this author Q&A with Diane Dykeman. You know her. She grew up here in South Dakota, went to a small one-room schoolhouse. We want to talk about some of those books as well that she wrote about that, her daughters, her life as a naval career. Spent 32 years in the military and still serves as president of the USS South Dakota Battleship Memorial here in Sioux Falls as well. Again, written books on a wide range of subjects, including three very successful biographies on country music legends. One thing I want to say is if you have any questions, please feel free to just jump in, raise your hand. We're more than happy to sort of cater to you as well. It's a very casual gathering. Diane, I touched briefly on your background during the opening. I want to find out how you went from being a small town South Dakota girl, obviously landlocked state, into a career in the Navy, as I find out that your sister also followed in. So how did that come about?
As you said, I went to a one-room country school, and my role model was Laura Ingalls Wilder, and as soon as I learned to read, I started reading her books, and I wanted to be a teacher in a one-room country school. And while I was going to college at Augustana, South Dakota passed a law that closed all the country schools. They said schools all had to be part of 12-year districts. And I did not want to teach in town schools. So at that time, my sister Kayo back there was in high school, and we decided we would join the Navy, following Mom's footsteps. She'd been a World War II wave. So Kayo eventually retired as a senior chief in the Navy, and I retired as a captain after 32 years. So that's what took me from the farm to
the world.
The Navy. Yep.
Now, your naval career overlapped with your writing career, obviously. When did you find that you had a gift to, become a multi-book author?
Well, there again, Laura Ingalls Wilder was my role model. A couple decades after that, after I was an aircraft maintenance officer, part of my job was writing enlisted evaluations, writing officer fitness reports, writing award recommendations, writing maintenance instructions, and I always tried to shorten them, not repeat myself, not use a lot of wasted words. So I got my first practice in writing doing that. And then in the early 90s, I was in my 40s by then, and I started thinking about how I'd like to tell our family story, such as going to the one-room country school. And Laura Ingalls Wilder had published her first books when she was 63 years old, so I thought, well, I've got plenty of time. So while I was over in Japan, then I wrote the first draft of my childhood memoir, Farm in the Hydewood, and I started working on my Navy memoir, Navy Green Shirt.
So, as we talked about, a wide, diverse group of backgrounds and stories. Some people find their niche in fiction, some in fact. You don't stick with one topic, though. Where does the inspiration come from? Is it all just real-world experiences, or how do you decide what's next?
It has to be something that interests me. It will definitely be nonfiction. I can't make stuff up. I like writing about people. I like telling people stories, so I find all the information about them and turn it into a story that people want to listen to, but it's all factual. It's
right.
Putting the pieces together, the puzzle pieces and such, that I enjoy telling the true story.
So let's get into the new book, Randy Travis, Storms of Life, a very apt title, not only for his life, but also through what you went through, leading up to even wanting to write the book. We discussed it earlier this week at lunch, that you were, we don't really want to use the word blacklisted, But you were sort of shut out and even trying to research his life. Can you talk about that?
That's really not surprising, because when you're a celebrity, there's always somebody coming along who wants this, who promises you these things, who says, I'm going to make a success of that. I had decided I would like to write Randy's story because I thought he had a good story to tell. He was someone whose music I enjoyed, and I knew I wouldn't get tired of talking about him. And I sent him letters for several years. I sent him birthday cards and said, I'd like to write your biography. And then finally, in 2019, he published his memoir, and that gave me the facts of his life. By this time, he had had his stroke and could no longer talk very much, so I wouldn't be able to interview him. But I wanted to write a biography this time on a person who was still alive and who had a large fan base and a good story to tell. So in 2019 then, I went to my press, who had published the Farron Young and Marty Robbins stories, and told them I'd like to write Randy Travis's biography. And my publisher agreed and gave me the contract. So then I started doing the research and trying to track down the musicians for interviews and such. And I talked to a couple of them, and then one of them sent me an email and said, management doesn't want us talking to you, so please do not use my interview. I thought, whoa, management. Well, so that kind of stopped me for some months. And then finally I got in touch with Randy's publicist, Zach Farnham, and he set up a meeting with my publisher, a phone conference with my publisher and me and him and then Randy and Mary. So my publisher explained to him the credibility of the press, my credibility as an author, that we weren't trying to do one of those tabloid type hurry up books or anything, and so we allayed a lot of their concerns about the validity of who I was and what I was trying to accomplish. And after that, then they were cooperative. I wasn't looking for approval. I when people asked me, are you writing an authorized biography? I say, no, I'm writing an objective one, because if it's touted as an authorized biography, then people think the person you're writing about has approved what you're saying, and that wouldn't do much for my credibility. So I told them what I would like is that when people came to them and said, should we talk to her, that they would just say yes. So that's how it turned out, and I eventually found more people, and they were all willing to talk to me, and Randy and Mary were always friendly and kind and polite. So it worked out really well. After we got acquainted, you know, that was the holdup there.
But at the same time, the acquaintance has gone actually further. I mean, I follow social media, as we all do. I've seen pictures of you and your friends staying at the Travises. So it has gone from completely shut out to a friendship. Does that help or hinder you when you're writing a book like this, trying to be objective, when you're friends with the subject? Can you be too close?
I suppose you could be too close. I mean, it was always a concern when I was writing, because I had to balance what I thought the reader would want to know and what the reader of a biography has a right to know, as opposed to what Randy and Mary might want me to say. And so I balanced it the best I could. I always had those two things in mind. And I did give them the manuscript twice that they had read the manuscript, and I asked them to make any corrections because I didn't want any errors in the book. And there were some things that they objected to, and so a lot of the changes I made and the things I didn't change, I explained to them why, that this was something that needed to be in the book.
Okay. And that was going to be my next question, is did they ask you to not include something? I mean, we don't have to obviously discuss the story, but were there certain topics that they felt were taboo? And did you ultimately use them?
There were. I toned several of them down.
Okay.
So, like, if they thought a section was too long, I'd go through it again and maybe cut out a few things that didn't change the story. But I was always showing that I was listening to them. And like I said, most of the things were, well, and it gave me more information, too, because all this came from Zach Farnham, the publicist. He spoke for them, and he would say that. That's not what Randy said. He said this. Well, great. Then I had a quote.
Obviously, me being a rock guy, I didn't know a lot of the history of Randy. I obviously, though, know the reputation. I know the voice. I know the biggest hits and things like that. One of the revelations that caught me off guard was how he struggled to actually get broken into the country music business, because Nashville at that time didn't like his sound, which again blows me away, because anytime I put on a Randy Travis record, that's what country music to me is.
Well, it may not be that Nashville didn't like his sound, though. Those who were selling the records and trying to get the radio play and all that, they were into the Kenny Rogers and Olivia Newton-John, and the steel guitars and fiddles had gone away, and that was what he was often told, is you're too country, and that always frustrated him. How can you be a country singer and be too country? So it took them a while. It took finding the A&R person, the artist and repertoire person at Warner Brothers, who signed him and believed in him and supported him, and then they started looking for songs, and what they found was when they played him on the radio, people liked them. People were waiting for that kind of music.
Absolutely. So that was a revelation to me. You obviously have been a country music fan your entire life. As based on your books on Fair and Young, an award-winning book on Marty Robbins, now this one on Randy Travis, was there something that you learned about Randy that you were able to include in the book that you didn't know before or really surprised you?
I don't know about surprise me. I certainly learned a lot about his life that I hadn't known before. I guess the one thing that I learned about him is he's a person who loves the music. He loved horses. He loved riding. He loved shooting guns. He wasn't all into business kind of stuff. He just wanted to enjoy what he enjoyed and let somebody else take care of the rest of it, and he was fortunate to have found two women in his life who were happy to do that. So the first was Elizabeth Hatcher, who he worked for her at a club in North Carolina, and she thought he could be a big star. So she invested her time, her money, and her love in Randy, and they went to Nashville, and he did become a star. And they were together for over 30 years. And then I guess their time was up. So they had a rather contentious divorce. And about that time, Mary Davis came along. And since then, Randy has been with her. So Elizabeth took care of all the business and getting him where he needed to go. And one of the frequent things that used to hear about Randy is he loved to visit with his fans, and in a restaurant he'd talk to everybody, and the fans would complain that they were having this good conversation with him, and then this woman, this nasty woman, would come and pull him away, and the fans got upset about that. And his publicist even wrote a letter in one of these fan magazines to explain that that was her job, that they had a schedule to keep, so it was up to her to keep. And I think that was perfect for Randy, because he didn't have to worry about the time or anything, and he was the good guy. He could just talk and talk until Elizabeth pulled him away, and then people would get mad at her, and she didn't mind. She could handle that, and he knew that he didn't have to worry about times or telling people, hey, sorry, I gotta go. So that was their relationship. And then after 2010, when he was with Mary, and it wasn't long after that, he had his stroke and his heart problems. So since then, he's mostly in a wheelchair, and he can only speak a few words. He has aphasia, which means that his brain can't formulate words. He knows what he wants to say, but he can't pronounce the word. So Mary has always been by his side. She helped him through those 6 months he was in the hospital, and they thought he was going to die. And then his recovery after that, and his rehab, and then they got married, and Mary has kept him in the public eye since then. And what they realized is the best thing for his therapy was to be out around people with music, because he loved music so, and of course he had so many fans, so that's, they have always made a point of going to shows, and that helps Randy heal. It's kind of a therapy for him, plus it keeps him in the news, and it keeps him involved in the music industry. You know, it's got to be really hard to have been up on stage and singing and all that he could do, and now you can't do any of that anymore. So now his life has changed so that he can support other people making music.
An amazing story. We're still in the process of obviously rolling this book out with the book releases, but I know writers, and you're always thinking ahead. Have you chosen another subject? Is it going to be, I know it's going to be fact-based, we've discussed that.
Sure.
Is it going to be another country music legend, or are you changing directions again?
Well, I guess I'm changing directions. I get a lot of people offering me ideas as to who needs a biography written on them, and I agree. There are a lot of people whose stories deserve to be told, and a lot of really interesting stories, and there are people I would enjoy writing about, but I've decided that my first two books were more like community service projects, because I did them because I wanted to tell these stories, but I will never make back the money I spent, not to mention the years I put into writing them. And so in the future, I'll be selective of what I write, that it's that maybe I can get something monetary out of it. But then I go back to where I was before, because my next subject is a World War II sailor who, the youngest combat sailor of World War II, Calvin Graham, he falsified his enlistment records when he was 12 years old and enlisted in the Navy and served on Battleship South Dakota. Well, I'm the president of the Battleship Memorial, so we are going to self-publish his book, his biography, and sell it in our museum store. So obviously, I'm not going to make any money off that one.
Right.
And that will be a smaller book. But I'd be open to writing another country music biography if it came along, I guess, as long as there was enough with it that I didn't have to put in a lot of work. And I mean, if somebody provided me with a bunch of research material, then there, and that, I've had a couple of suggestions that might work, and so I don't know what else I'll be doing.
Well, there's more to come. Does anybody have any questions before we wrap up?
I actually have a question. Did you ever journal? You know, starting your writing, did you start out like journaling, or we used to have diaries, anything like that?
Oh, I have written a diary since I was in the seventh grade, so I still do that, but I don't put thoughts into it. It's facts, not surprisingly.
Okay.
So what I did today and that, so I've always had, so like when I was writing my memoirs, I could go back to my diaries to find dates and places and all that sort of thing. So I do have that, but it's more factual than thought.
I kind of wondered how you remembered all those facts.
Yep, I have a lot of that written down.
She has a notebook right here just in case as well.
I do.
I would imagine you probably carry that with you everywhere.
Well, I always have paper and pens in my purse, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
We were talking on the phone one day when she was just starting to write her book, and she says, well, today I wrote chapter 2. How do you know that's chapter 2?
Great question.
How do you know you've covered everything, and now you're just, it's just like you're going from chair to chair to chair, you know, everything's in order. But she can do it.
Well, that's one. I am a chronological person, and one thing I do, and this is something I recommend to other writers who want to write about a person, is to keep a record of the dates. Way back in, I don't know, 2017 or something, when I wanted to write Randy's story, I started keeping a record of all the dates in his life. His birth date, and every time, yep, up to when I finished writing the book, when I'd run across a date where he had been, I put it in that file, and it ends up as, it's like 40 pages of where Randy Travis has been his entire life. So that's a big help when there's been many times that I didn't know what year something happened or an actual date, but I could go back to that and I could pick out the places he'd been before and after or something like that, and I could pinpoint the actual date.
Any other questions? Diane, I know you want to point out thank a couple of special people in the audience today, too.
Oh, well, I intended to do that earlier, to introduce my research assistants, my traveling partners, my sister Kale Paver back there, who, like I said, is retired Navy senior chief, and Perry Stilo. One or both of them has gone with me on most all my trips, and then my daughter Amanda, who helps me out also, and they all offer me advice and support. So, and you can see they're all three here today.
Always in support. It's wonderful to have these people. If there's no other questions, I just want to thank everybody for coming. Obviously, the book is available here and through Diane's website. If you'd like to come up and get an autograph, picture, maybe ask a question one-on-one, if you're not comfortable with a crowd like this, that's great too. We're going to be here for a while. So thank you all for coming, and thank you, Diane, for inviting me to be along with this. I enjoyed it.
And thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Crash.
Enjoyed it. Thank you. Come on up.